Our neighbors to the south just passed a big clean energy package, including a plan to require 100% carbon-free energy for the state by the year 2045. Here's Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker speaking at the bill signing earlier this month.
We can't outrun or hide from climate change, not to the north where the boundary waters burn, not to the south where Ida swallows lives and livelihoods in the blink of an eye. No, the consequences of our actions are here all around us. We've seen the effects of climate change right here in Illinois repeatedly in the last 2.5 years alone.
The plan calls for a lot of things. It includes an electric vehicle credit, incentives to build more charging stations, and bailing out a pair of nuclear power plants. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think Wisconsin is doing when it comes to clean energy initiatives? Do you have a plan in your part of the state or a solar power or wind energy facility near you? What do you think of it, if so? If you're in Illinois, what do you think about this new legislation? If you're our neighbors in Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, what are your states up to? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jack Kerfoot is a scientist, energy expert, and author of the book Fueling America, An Insider's Journey. He began working in the energy industry back in the 1970s, is a board member for the environmental nonprofit Engineers for a Sustainable Future. Jack, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob. It's a pleasure to be on Central Time.
One of the things that prompted this conversation is that new effort in our neighbors in Illinois. What do you think of what you're seeing in this plan in Illinois? I know sometimes there are big goals to say we're going to be carbon neutral by X year, but the devil's in the details. What are you seeing here?
Well, what I see is legislation, but what I didn't see was an actual plan to make this transition happen and a removal of barriers that may be there that restrict the development of new renewable energy projects. So in practice, or in from a legislative standpoint, I think it's very positive. But the question is, do they actually have a plan in place to make this transition happen? Unfortunately, there are states that have passed renewable energy bills targeting 2040 or 2045 or 2050 for being carbon neutral, and then do very little to make actual progress because they feel they'll be out of office by that time. And we need to focus on reducing greenhouse gas emissions over the next 10 years and then continuing to reduce those greenhouse gas emissions between to 2030, 2040, and 2050. So we need to make continual progress, but particular emphasis over the next 10 years. That's what has come out of the United Nations report on climate change.
We're here in the Midwest. We have cold winters, so we got a heat. We have hot summers, so we turn on the air conditioning. Is carbon neutral a reasonable goal in a short time span in Midwestern states?
Well, I think we have to recognize that every power source has advantages and disadvantages. But if we talk about carbon neutral, that means renewable energy, which includes hydro, it includes wind, it includes solar, it includes geothermal, and even includes waste energy, which countries like Sweden have been using wet and dry waste to basically generate 93% of their electrical power. And also, more importantly, although there's small amounts of greenhouse gas emissions, in that particular model that they use, they're generating less greenhouse emissions from landfill. Now, if we introduce the other factor, which is nuclear, that has zero greenhouse gas emission. So with nuclear and renewable energy, I think that we can actually get to 70-80% by 2030.
Let's move from Illinois over to Iowa. I understand they have a decent amount of energy coming from renewables. I know when I drive there, I tend to see some wind farms along the way. What are you seeing in a state like Iowa?
Well, actually, let's start with, if you look at the Midwest, the state that gets the gold star is actually South Dakota. They generate, as of June of this year, 79% of their power is from renewables, and 11% coal and 10% natural gas. Iowa is second with 43%, but they have 44% of their power from coal and 13% from natural gas. The reason coal is important is coal generates anywhere from 40 to 45% more greenhouse gas emission than natural gas. So many states, we've seen a drop in greenhouse gas emissions in the United States over the last 15 years. Some utilities have simply achieved this by moving from coal to natural gas. Others have actually moved to natural gas, but also ramped up the renewable energy. So from that standpoint, Iowa is making good progress, but they need to particularly accelerate the move away from coal and look at other renewables to achieve this. And nuclear may be a viable option for them in the long term.
Talking to Jack Kerfoot, author of the book Fueling America, an insider's journey, member of the board of the environmental nonprofit Engineers for a Sustainable Future, looking at renewable energy efforts here in the Midwest. Wisconsin, our neighbors. We'll let South Dakota be in the Midwest for this conversation. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more renewable energy efforts? Do you have a wind or solar energy facility coming near you? Is there opposition to it, as there sometimes is? What do you think? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Jack, I know sometimes when a wind facility is planned or a solar, sometimes the neighbors aren't wild about it, either what it'll do to the landscape view, things like that. How much pushback at the local level do you see when renewable energy plans come in?
Well, it actually depends on the region that you're in. If you're talking about states like Oklahoma and Texas, actually you will find that the farmers and ranchers are very supportive, because for them, when a wind turbine is put on their farmland, it actually generates a revenue stream for the farmers. They share in the profits from the power generation that is sold to the utility. So from their standpoint, it's no different than a producing oil well than a producing wind turbine. You go into other regions where it is something new and a bit foreign, and they may drive by and look at that and say, it spoils my view. They may have a very a local view of focusing only on how it impacts them from their standpoints. But there's also, unfortunately, we'll call it fake news that's out there. We've heard wind turbines cause cancer, and that is not true. Any research, medical research I've read in Europe or the United States. Other factors is you'll hear pushback on solar parks. They'll say, well, it's taking up valuable farmland. Well, actually, the U.S. Agricultural Agency and also reports in Europe have shown that the integration of solar in farmlands is called agrivoltaics. Actually, what they've seen repeatedly is increased population in the pollinating insects like bees and butterflies. And so from that, we've actually seen increased production in the regional farmlands because of the photovoltaics. So there's a lot of, unfortunately, false information that's out there. And unfortunately, too, change is sometimes difficult for people to accept. They think that oil and gas will last forever and coal will last forever. But in actual fact, it won't. No fossil fuel is renewable. We have to recognize that. And I appreciate, too, that in the Midwest, that coal has a long history that goes back well over 100 years. But we have to recognize that the jobs for the people in the states of Illinois or Ohio or Wisconsin is actually better job security moving to wind and solar. In the early 1900s, coal mining in the U.S. employed approximately 900,000 people. Well, in 2019, the industry in the U.S. actually employed just over 53,000 people, and only about 32,000 were actually in the mines. The reason for that was, first of all, not wind and solar, it's automation in the mines. And the second factor is, when a coal mine is no longer economic, they close the mine and the jobs are lost. But as long as the wind is blowing and the sun is shining, those jobs stay there on the wind farms and the solar parks. And these are good quality jobs with job security.
I want to get into manufacturing some of the supplies needed here in Minnesota, a big plan in the works for a solar power manufacturing facility. Do you see this as an industrial opportunity in the Midwest?
I see it as an industrial opportunity across the United States. I think it's imperative that we develop, just like we saw for a period of time in the 60s and 70s, a lot of automobile plants being shipped to Asia, particularly Japan at the time. And then we saw legislation that was passed at the federal level that encouraged the development of new plants, automobile plants, in the Midwest and across the United States. And I think that's the next thing that we need to focus on, is to basically ramp up our manufacturing capabilities for wind and solar and other forms of renewable energy. We have to realize there's a big building boom right now off the east coast of the U.S., from Maine all the way down to North Carolina, with multiple large offshore wind farms. Now, wind farms offshore have been generating power in Europe for almost 30 years. And our first offshore wind turbine actually came online in 2017 and off in the state waters of Rhode Island. And there's a second one that's just gone on stream in the federal waters off of North Carolina. But over the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to see 20 or perhaps even 30 new offshore wind farms. And those need infrastructure, they also need wind turbines, and we also need wind turbine technicians. One of the positions that's the most highly recruited and scarcest in supply is actually a wind turbine technicians, both onshore and certainly offshore. So ramping up manufacturing for solar and for wind, I think we'll actually see that by 2030, that wind and solar will create over 2 million new jobs.
We're looking at the ways the different Midwestern states are tackling clean energy development, wind, solar, maybe even nuclear power. Our guest is energy expert Jack Herfoot, author of the book Fueling America, An Insider's Journey. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in the energy sector? What do things look like from your perspective? Do you have a solar or wind project in the works in your community, maybe on your farm? What do you want to see happen here in Wisconsin or whichever state you're in right now when it comes to renewable energy? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with energy industry expert Jack Kerfoot. We're talking about how different states in the Midwest are going about drawing more power from renewable sources and what they can learn from each other. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, Jack. I'm looking for a resource, some independent study that calculates the global warming penalty that every new wind turbine or solar plant creates. So in other words, putting up a 1 megawatt wind turbine is going to cause a negative impact on the environment for a period of 5, 10, 15 years before it nets to zero. And then we see a positive benefit. So in other words, if we start throwing tens of thousands of new wind turbines across this country, we're going to exacerbate the global warming of the Earth for a period of time before we get a return.
Mike, thanks for calling. I think Mike's saying in the manufacturing process of those turbines, there'd be a climate change hit, Jack.
Well, anytime you manufacture anything, if you generate steel, then yes, you are going to be generating greenhouse gas emissions from that standpoint. Now, we have to recognize that we're not just starting from scratch with renewable energy. We have to realize in 2005, coal and renewable energy were used to generate, coal was used to generate 50% of our greenhouse gas emissions, and renewable energy, which is in 2005, 15 years ago, was about 9%, and that was primarily from hydro. 15 years later, coal and renewable energy, well, coal has dropped down to 19% and is projected to drop below 10% over the next 10 years. And renewable has increased to 20%, and that's moving to wind. So if you go down to from Minnesota down to Iowa, down to Wyoming, down to Montana, you're going to see significant, and certainly in Texas. Texas actually has more wind power production than any other state. And we're also seeing the private sector, it's not just utilities, it's also companies like Amazon, General Motors, Facebook, target stores that are effectively signing power purchase agreements with independent contractors to build wind farms or solar parks to generate clean, green energy. And they're doing that not only for the environment, but also for economics. The lowest cost of power to generate power on a levelized basis actually is onshore wind at about 3.5 cents per kilowatt hour. The average cost of electricity in the United States is about 13.5 cents. In Wisconsin, I believe your power is running about 14.7 cents per kilowatt hour. So by moving to the renewables, you'll see a drop in the actual cost, which means the ratepayer will see a savings. But the answer specifically to his question, I would point him to our Department of Energy, has significant websites or numerous websites, including the U.S. Energy Information Agency, which has information on greenhouse gas emissions from the manufacturing to actually the actual generation of different types of fuel types, whether it's coal or natural gas, or even from small amounts that come out of hydro. So from that standpoint, I point him to the Department of Energy websites. I frequently consult and check on information with the U.S. Energy Information Agency. I find it a very reliable and, to be honest, one of the best in the world when it comes to providing very useful and accurate information on energy.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We'll go to Mark now in Stevens Point. Mark, hi.
Hi. Hey, I've got a question on the disincentives on certain states, including Wisconsin, in which they go ahead and they put a $40 fee if you have solar panels on your roof. And on top of that, if you don't, if you produce more than what you actually are consuming, they only pay for 4 cents instead of 14 cents, which is what you pay for per kilowatt hour. Is there any legislation at the national level to make the playing field level?
Well, what you'll find is that every state has a public utility commission, and utilities have to go to the PUC to get approval for new power projects or new policies or procedures like you're describing. What you're describing is a metering process that is, to be honest, I find egregious, in my humble opinion. Yes, because quite candidly, you could... In some states, you'll actually have a buyback provision that would generate a much larger amount from that standpoint, or you would get a credit in kilowatt hours that would allow you to basically apply that credit. If you're going to supply power to the utility, you could then get a credit to your bill in kilowatt hours, which would give you a reduction at the price you're telling me. So from that standpoint, it will take legislation, approval from the state or from the public utility, or probably both, to get these changes. So the real issue is about metering, and unfortunately, some of the utilities have taken this as an opportunity to increase their profit margins, and so obviously that's not something that supports the move to clean, green energy, and so for that reason, I think it is absolutely the wrong policy to take.
Thanks for the call, Mark. We're talking to Jack Kerfoot, energy expert, about renewable energy in the Midwest. Back to your calls now. Tim is with us, driving to northern Wisconsin right now. Tim, hi.
How are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Tim?
I'm thinking back to the winter storm in Texas that shut so much of that grid down. What do we have that's going to ensure that this doesn't happen as the country moves forward by developing its infrastructure in solar and wind, so that this sort of thing doesn't happen in the Midwest?
Well, that I would say is absolutely an excellent question. But actually, the question you're asking is, how do we ensure the stability of the grid? 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, state utilities, basically all the power that was generated in the state, was generated in coal or nuclear or maybe natural gas plants in their state. Now what we're seeing is the development of new renewable energy, that we're seeing power being transmitted for great distances across the state. Now, in the case of Texas, What we had happened was they have what's called a grid for the state of Texas. Now, the good news about their system that they have is they can get approval to begin work on a renewable energy project or at the permitting process, which is environmental permitting, and also to make sure they can tie it into their grid in a very short period of time. The problem was the grid was not prepared for this type of weather that they were having. The temperature that they had in February in Texas was 40 to 50 degrees below the average temperature in that region. So they had highline wires go down, and then the other factor was the temperatures were so low, what did everybody do? They ramped up their power, all right? So because of that, the demand spiked, and then the power lines dropped, so now the utilities were trying to figure out how they could supply power to as large a region as they possibly could. The reality is they came within a few hours of having a blackout across the entire state, but the issue was the security of the grid. That's one of the aspects of President Biden's infrastructure bill, is developing a secure grid, and we have to look at security in a lot of ways. First of all, we have to recognize, unfortunately, there are people out there that would like to hack the grid and try and ransom utilities or states or the federal government for millions of dollars to release the virus that they have on the grid system, and that's been attempted a couple of times. The second factor is we have to recognize that climate change is alive and well, and the UN has documented on a global basis there's over an 80% increase in severe weather from over the previous 20 years to the current 20 years, 2001 to 2021. And so what we're seeing is unprecedented cold weather up where I live in the Pacific Northwest. We had temperatures in early June in Oregon, which are typically in the mid-70s. Temperatures topped out over 120 degrees. And the hot spot that we had went from Alberta, Canada, British Columbia, down to Washington, Oregon, and into Idaho. And there were over 500 deaths from this. The reason we didn't have the blackouts they had in Texas was, quite candidly, not that many people in the Pacific Northwest have air conditioning. So they didn't have the ability to really ramp up the air conditioning on their house. So we've got to recognize security of the grid is absolutely essential. Now, the good news with distribution of your power sources, multiple wind and solar projects around there, in addition to other sources as well, is it allows you to redeploy the power to the regions that may have a surge in demand or areas that may have power outages.
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Jack Kerfoot, author of Fueling America, An Insider's Journey, looking at renewable energy in the Midwest.